Today is Friday, September the 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres convened the first global summit on the future of food, saying that billions of people are overweight, while millions were hungry, and food production and processes are contributing to the destruction of the environment.
For a world where nutritious food is available and affordable for everyone, everywhere. But today, more than 820 million people do not have enough to eat.
In Pakistan, Foreign Minister Shah Mahmood Qureshi says the world needs to be more realistic in its approach to the Taliban and try an innovative way of engaging with them.
If you could not convince them or eliminate them in 2 decades, how will you do it in the next 2 months or the next 2 years?
And President Biden's special envoy to Haiti has quit in protest of migrants being expelled to their homeland. We have those stories and more coming up right here on International Edition. Stay tuned. Hundreds of heads of state are in New York City this week at the UN headquarters for the annual General Assembly. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres convened the first global summit on the future of food with the aim of ending hunger and poverty and taking action on climate change.
For a world where nutritious food is available and affordable for everyone, everywhere. But today, more than 820 million people do not have enough to eat. And the climate emergency is an increasing threat to food security. Meanwhile, 2 billion men, women, and children are overweight or obese. Unhealthy diets present an enormous risk of disease and death. It is unacceptable that hunger is on the rise at a time when the world wastes more than 1 billion tons of food every year. It is time to change how we produce and consume, including to reduce greenhouse emissions. Transforming food systems is crucial for delivering all the sustainable development goals. That is why I hope to convene a food system summit in 2021 as part of the Decade of Action to deliver the sustainable development goals. As a human family, a world free of hunger is our imperative.
That was UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. And for more on the summit and other diplomatic activity taking place at the UN, I'm joined by VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir.
So, Margaret, today the UN held its first global food summit. What was the aim of the summit, and were there any major commitments or initiatives announced at the summit?
Right. So this has been in the works for over a year. They've been planning this. And the idea is to get the conversation going on how the world is going to make its food systems not just healthier in terms of producing more healthy food for everybody, but also tied into other areas of development, like climate, in terms of producing food in a way that's better for the environment, that doesn't produce more carbon dioxide, things like that. So the numbers are really quite shocking. 3 billion people cannot afford a healthy diet. I mean, that's half the planet when you think about it, because there's a little over 7 billion people in the world. So it's a huge number of people. And nearly a third of all food that is produced is either lost or wasted. So, the UN is saying we need to shift how we look at food. It's not just a commodity. It's a human right. Mm-hmm. And we need to make sure we provide people with fair, equitable access to healthy food and healthy diets, because right. It's so important to all areas of their life. For kids, at school, if they're hungry, they don't learn well. For workers, if they're not eating a good diet, they don't work well. So it really impacts everything. It's not just, food to live. It's food as fuel for our
for productivity.
Development.
Yes. Yeah. Now, it was reported that hundreds of civil society groups and activists boycotted the food summit, many complaining that the agenda had been hijacked by corporate interests. How likely is their refusal to participate in the summit going to affect its goals or agenda?
Right. So the Deputy Secretary General, Amina Mohammed, was actually asked about that today. And she said that it's been a very inclusive process, and that it's involved indigenous people, it's involved civil society, they've been extremely represented, it's involved youth. One of the slogans of this actually was no decisions about us without us. That's what one of the food summit slogans was, that the young people were saying, no decisions about us without
us. To show that he wasn't.
So she said, well, they weren't, you know, well, nothing is perfect. She felt that this was an extremely inclusive process.
Right. And it's a good first step. Okay. So let's move over from the food summit. President Biden, during his speech this week at the UN, said that he wanted a new era of global diplomacy. Now, however, some of his allies, American allies, are saying that, you know, his actions, especially with regards to France, appear to belie this new philosophy. What are the two countries doing to mend that relationship?
Right. Well, you know, this is one of the great things about the UN General Assembly, is that it provides leaders sort of face-to-face opportunity to see each other and speak about pressing issues. And this whole issue with the submarine deal came up just literally days before the UN General Assembly meetings. And it's a really rare falling out between the US and France, who are really tight, close allies. On Wednesday, President Biden spoke with President Macron of France, and the readout of that conversation seemed to include some humble language from the American side, saying that perhaps this process would have been would have benefited from open consultations among allies. And today, there was a meeting between Secretary of State Blinken and the French Foreign Minister Le Drian, and they also had some positive language coming out about it. And the French withdrew their ambassador from Washington the other day because they were so angry about this. But they said they would be returning him next week to the U.S. Capitol. So it seems that this opportunity has given the two countries a chance to, you know, one side to explain why they're angry and one side to explain their actions. And they've seem to have gone a long way to repairing the rift. And I think one interesting thing that seems to have come out of it, in both statements from both readouts from the White House and from the Secretary of State and the foreign ministers' meetings, is that the U.S. Made some commitments about reinforcing its support to counterterrorism operations in the Sahel in Africa, and that are being conducted by France and some other European nations. And this is something that the French have wanted for a long time. They want a strong commitment from the U.S. on the G5 Sahel force, and the Africans want it too. So it'll be interesting to see if there's any new commitments coming from Washington in the next weeks or couple of months.
VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir, she joined me from the UN headquarters in New York City.
Voice of America!
President Biden is calling on fellow Democrats to resolve a party split on the $3.5 trillion Build Back Better plan. AP correspondent Mike Garcia reports.
With the clock ticking toward a Monday deadline, President Joe Biden pressed congressional Democrats Wednesday to come up with a final framework for his centerpiece $3.5 trillion Build Back Better agenda. Biden met with more than 20 lawmakers at the White House as meetings stretched into the evening. Monday is the deadline set by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi for a vote on the smaller $1 trillion public works measure already approved by the Senate. But progressive Democrats are threatening to withhold their votes unless it's linked to the bigger package. After meeting with Biden, Pelosi told reporters,
"We are on schedule, let's put it that way."
Meanwhile, September 30th is the deadline to keep the government funded and to suspend the federal debt limit to avert a government shutdown and a U.S. default. Mike Gracia, Washington.
And at a news conference, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says there is no final price tag for the bill.
We'll get more estimates as to how much money comes in on certain things, but we know that we can cover the proposal that the president has put forth.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Meanwhile, President Biden's special envoy to Haiti has quit in protest of migrants being expelled to their homeland. AP Washington correspondent Saga Megani reports.
In his resignation letter, Daniel Foote says he will not be associated with the U.S.'s inhumane, counterproductive decision to deport Haitians to their violence-wracked country. He says the administration's policy approach to Haiti is deeply flawed, and his recommendations have been ignored and dismissed. Foote was appointed special envoy in July. His sudden resignation adds to sharp bipartisan criticism the administration's faced over the expulsions from Del Rio, Texas. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
At a news conference, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says Daniel Foote's views were not ignored.
There have been multiple senior-level policy conversations on Haiti where all proposals, including those led by Special Envoy Foote, were fully considered in a rigorous policy process. Special Envoy Foote had ample opportunity to raise concerns about migration during his tenure. He never once did so. Now, that wasn't his purview. His purview was, of course, being the special envoy on the ground. His positions were, and his views were put forward. They were valued. They were heard. Different policy decisions were made. And
White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, U.S. lawmakers on both sides of the aisle criticized the treatment of thousands of Haitian migrants attempting to cross the U.S.-Mexico border Wednesday as the U.S. increased deportation flights out of the state of Texas. The bipartisan criticism came as top Biden administration officials condemned images showing U.S. Border Patrol agents on horseback chasing migrants seeking asylum. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
The crossing between the U.S. and Mexico in Del Rio, Texas, locked down Wednesday. 35, 35. As thousands of Haitian migrants set up camp under the bridge between the two countries, waiting to cross and claim asylum. After startling images of Border Patrol agents on horseback detaining migrants earlier this week, a top U.S. Homeland Security official promised a swift investigation. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas.
The images that emanated from Del Rio, Texas, over the last several days, and correctly and necessarily were met with our nation's horror, because they do not reflect who we are as a country, nor do they reflect who the United States Customs and Border Protection is.
The White House echoed those concerns while noting U.S. immigration policy still has to be followed at the border. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
This has been an incredibly heart-wrenching issue. We've watched the photos of Haitians gathering under a bridge, many with families, and the horrific video of the CBP officers on horses using brutal and inappropriate measures against innocent people. I think it's important to address that and separately address what our immigration policies are and understand that people are combining them.
But congressional Republicans said the Biden administration's immigration policies directly caused this crisis. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
This nightmare is the direct result of the left-wing policies and left-wing messages pushed by the Biden administration. They say their approach to immigration is the compassionate path, the one that reflects the soul of America. They are wrong.
The Border Patrol response also drew harsh criticism from Democrats, who probed the reasons Haitians in particular are being deported and called for an end to summary deportations initiated by the Trump administration based on the COVID-19 pandemic. Democratic Representative Sheila Jackson Lee.
How much did race play a part in these actions? Are you looking into that as well? And also, have you considered this Trump relic of Title 42, not eliminating, but a suspension of it, in light of the fact that Haitians have been determined to be no national security threat?
With respect to Title 42 and its exercise, that is an authority of the Centers for Disease Control. It is not a matter of immigration policy. It is a matter of public health policy driven by the situation of COVID-19. And where the trajectory of that pandemic is.
Thousands of Haitian migrants are being released into the U.S. if they promise to appear at an immigration office within 60 days, while others are being deported on flights back to Haiti. The criteria for who stays and goes is not immediately clear. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
The U.S. Food and Drug Authority has signed off on COVID-19 vaccine booster doses for some Americans, but there are more hurdles ahead before the shots are actually administered. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani joins us again.
The FDA authorized boosters for specific groups, including those 65 and older and others at high risk from the virus. That's drastically scaled back from the Biden administration's plan to give boosters to nearly all adults. Meantime, CDC advisors will meet again today to make their own more specific recommendations. Yesterday, some advisors were so perplexed by questions surrounding the need for boosters that they suggested putting off a decision for a month in hopes of getting more evidence. The White House says it's ready to start administering boosters after the CDC's final recommendation. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. And Pakistan Foreign Minister Shah Mahmood Qureshi says that the world needs to be more realistic in its approach to the Taliban and try an innovative way of engaging with them.
20 years is sufficient time. If you could not convince them or eliminate them in 2 decades, how will you do it in the next 2 months or the next 2 years?
That was Pakistan Foreign Minister Shah Mahmood Qureshi.
Voice of America!
A UN investigator on Myanmar has accused the country's military junta of systematic attacks against the people of Myanmar that may amount to crimes against humanity. The report by the special rapporteur was submitted Wednesday to the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
In a blistering attack against Myanmar's coup leaders, special investigator Thomas Andrews presented documented evidence of mass atrocity crimes against the people of Myanmar. He says more than 1,100 people have been killed, more than 8,000 arbitrarily arrested, and more than 230,000 forcibly displaced. This since the military junta seized control of the democratically elected government of Aung San Suu Kyi February 1st. He described in wrenching detail the killings of protesters in the streets, of beatings and torture of people in detention, of entire villages being attacked by bombs and rocket-propelled grenades. He said no one is spared, not even the children. He noted at least 75 children aged 14 months to 17 years have been killed by junta forces as of July.
I've also received credible reports of children being tortured, including 2 boys who were starved and then had their legs burnt with iron rods. Now the junta is increasingly relying on another depraved tactic, the use of collective punishment, including the abduction of family members of those who have been issued arrest warrants, but who police and military forces are unable to locate.
Andrew said the people are not taking the general's abuse lying down. He said members of the deposed civilian government and ethnic leaders have formed a national unity government as a legitimate opposition to the junta. He said civilian-led people's defense forces are providing security for villages. But he noted Myanmar would not gain its independence without vigorous support and action by the international community.
In my view, the well-intentioned efforts of those who have sought to end this violence through engagement and dialogue will not succeed as long as the military junta lacks the will to end its brutality, and this can only come with leverage. The fact is, current efforts by the international community to stop the downward spiral of events in Myanmar are simply not working.
The UN investigator called for coordinated international action and targeted economic sanctions against the junta. For example, he said sanctions on Myanmar oil and gas enterprise could stop the junta from continuing to steal the country's natural resource wealth. He said a comprehensive embargo of weapons and dual-use technology could save lives. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And in more headline news, U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris met India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi on Thursday and stressed the importance of a free and open Indo-Pacific region. Harris also welcomed India's decision to resume exports of the COVID-19 vaccine and said that both countries must work together to protect democracies around the world. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. After 16 years, Germany is preparing to bid farewell to Chancellor Angela Merkel, who is stepping down after elections scheduled for Sunday. As Henry Ridgewell reports from Berlin, Merkel was Germany's first female chancellor and its first leader to have been raised in the former East Germany.
Angela Merkel's political career began as the Iron Curtain was falling in Europe. After German reunification in 1990, she was appointed Minister for Women and Youth. She became leader of the Christian Democrats in 2000 and narrowly won the 2005 election. She faced her first major crisis just 3 years later, the global financial crash. Amid a run on German banks, Merkel sought to steady nerves.
Und wir sagen den Sparerinnen und Sparern,
she told reporters, we say to savers that their deposits are safe and the German government stands behind that. The banking crisis turned into a euro debt crisis. Merkel was reluctant to underwrite the eurozone. She became a figure of hate in Greece, which implemented deep spending cuts. Europe teetered, but the euro survived. Nico Friedel is parliamentary correspondent for the Süddeutsche Zeitung newspaper.
Also, Frau Merkel wird ja bezeichnet als Krisenkanzlerin.
He said Merkel is known as a crisis chancellor, as she has had to overcome several global crises during her time in office, not only for Germany, but also within the European Union and with transatlantic partners, as well as China and Russia. Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2014 brought conflict to Europe. Merkel kept up dialogue with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Ursula Weidenfeld is a Merkel biographer and author of the book The Chancellor.
Angela Merkel's style is to talk and talk and talk and talk. And even with China, even with Russia.
Merkel's biggest challenge came with the 2015 migrant crisis. She refused to close Germany's borders as refugees and migrants poured into Europe. More than 1 million migrants arrived in Germany, many escaping the war in Syria. It prompted a fierce backlash. Merkel was unapologetic.
Ich muss ganz ehrlich sagen, wenn wir jetzt anfangen, uns noch entschuldigen zu müssen dafür.
She said if we have to start excusing ourselves for showing a friendly face in times of crisis, then this is not my country. 6 years on, Merkel says she has no regrets. Again, Nico Friedel of the Süddeutsche Zeitung. He said she believed that these people should be treated properly, that they shouldn't be stuck behind borders. But that did more to divide Europe rather than to unify it. The question of how the bloc should handle migration is still not solved today. In 2016 came Brexit and the election of Donald Trump as US president. Transatlantic relations were visibly strained. Again, Merkel biographer Ursula Weidenfeld.
When she recognized there will be no way to find a relationship to that president, which could be constructive, she just turned around and made friends with his daughter.
Merkel was often the only woman among powerful men. Asked directly in 2017 whether she was a feminist, Merkel said she did not want to be labelled. Earlier this month, her view had changed.
Schüchtern vorgebracht. Heute ist das besser.
She said, today I have thought my answer through more, and so I can say, yes, we should all be feminists. With pragmatism and determination, her supporters say Angela Merkel has steered Germany through numerous crises and provided stability for Europe and the West. But critics say the crisis chancellor failed to look to the future. Again, Merkel biographer Ursula Weidenfeld.
She always solved the problems and the issues which are on the table. But in terms of investing in resilience, investing in political lines which are longer than 2 or 3 or 4 years, like climate change, she didn't do enough.
Merkel grew up in the quiet town of Templin, north of Berlin, then in East Germany, and still has family in the town. The mayor, Detlef Tabert, says she typifies the local character.
Auszeichnen, vor allen Dingen die ruhige Gelassenheit.
Her quiet composure, her down-to-earth nature, And what you also see in her is this Prussian tenacity, that when you start something, you stick with it to the end, he said. For Germany, for Europe, it is the end of an era. For Angela Merkel, perhaps the beginning of something new. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Berlin.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week. Right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
And for our final story of the week, Somalia's National Theatre in Mogadishu held a landmark event Wednesday night, screening movies for the first time in 3 decades. The theatre was recently renovated and reopened after being destroyed twice, once in Somalia's civil war and then again in a 2012 suicide bombing. More than 1,500 people attended the screenings, as Mohamed Kahir reports from Mogadishu.
The two films, Horse, Meaning Shadow in Somali, and the other, Death of Hell, were screened in the Chinese Bell Theatre, constructed in 1967. Starring Egypt-based actor Kajama, the short films depict some of the challenges faced by young Somalis brought up outside the country and who are not familiar with Somali and Islamic culture. Jama says that the films were produced in Cairo with no resources and largely on volunteers among her peers, with no payments for actors and actresses. The producers convinced hotels and hospitals to let them film on the grounds in exchange for advertisement in order to avoid extra costs. The theater also used volunteers for its reconstruction, which was overseen by the government. The building was completely destroyed during Somalia's civil war in early 1990s. It was rebuilt in 2012, only to be ruined again as its reopening after being targeted by Al-Shabaab suicide bomber. Then Prime Minister Abdiwali Mohamed Ali survived the explosion, but dozens of others died. For this renovation, workers installed some 1,500 new seats. The theater official reopened last year and has hosted graduation ceremonies for local schools. According to organizers, more than 1,000 tickets were sold for Wednesday's night screening. Among the participants was Ilhan Mahmoud. The moviegoer said she was very happy and excited to be at the National Theatre for the first time in her life. She said she felt patriotic regarding the progress that is continuously made in her country. Information and Culture Minister Osman Dube said the theatre will host more events in coming weeks. He said the theatre is expected to showcase films, plays, poetry, book fairs and comedy that reflect Islamic and Somali culture. Mohamed Kahir for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Be well, be safe, have a great weekend.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa. on the next Straight Talk Africa. As countries worldwide work to get shots in arms, many are running into a problem of trust and vaccine hesitancy. Is fake news behind it? And is misinformation on social media hurting vaccination drives across Africa? Join me, Haydee Adams, on the next Straight Talk Africa, this Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.